This is The Allusionist, in which I, Helen Zaltzman, hold language up to the light to check it's legit. Coming up are some of your opinions about the use of please in response to the last episode about differences in how the word is deployed in the US versus the UK. And before that, continents. I can now reveal that continent, the landmass kind, and continent, the bladder control kind, both derive from the same Latin verb, continere, to hold together. I expect you can infer how that applies to continent, as in the control of the bodily evacuations, and continent has been used in that sense since the 19th century, but it had entered the English language via French quite a while earlier, around the 14th century, and during the intervening time it was more about self-restraint, particularly reining in sexual urges, and I still like to describe my stoical family as emotionally continent. The landmass meaning of continent arrived in English a little later, in the mid-16th century, nothing to do with holding in your emotions or effluent except for that mutual root word continere, which appeared in the Latin term terra continens, land held together, or a continuous land. And this is where the modern day definition of continent runs into a bit of a mess. Because what is meant by continent? If a continent is a continuous land, are all islands continents, even tiny ones like Guernsey? No offence to Guernsey, but I don't think Guernsey would call itself a continent for fear of being laughed out of the channel. And would it mean that all the land masses that are joined together count as just one continent? I know Afro-Eurasia is considered a single continent by some factions of continent considerers, but then Africa is technically surrounded by water because there's the Suez Canal, and North and South America are divided by the Panama Canal, so if you're in the contingent that defines a continent as a landmass bordered on all sides by water, North and South America, Africa, Antarctica and Australia each get to be separate continents, but does Greenland ever get invited to the being a continent party? And then in some definitions of the continents, Europe and Asia are separate, in others they're bundled together as one continent, Eurasia, because depending on whether you define continents geographically, geopolitically or geologically, there are either 4, 5, 6 or 7 continents. And which country belongs to which continent varies according to which interpretation of continent. Do you group countries together according to whether they occupy the same continental plate? Or some other way? I thought I knew which countries belonged in Europe until Israel and Australia started competing in the Eurovision Song Contest. I bet this was more straightforward in the era of one single continent, Pangaea. Firstly, because that predated language. 300 million years ago, all the continents, whatever they are, bashed into each other to form the supercontinent Pangaea, named from ancient Greek terms, pan, meaning all, and Gaia, the deity who is the mother of the earth and the universe. The name Pangaea was coined by the German meteorologist and geophysicist Alfred Wegener, who spearheaded the theory of continental drift in his 1915 book The Origins of Continents and Oceans. Well, actually in it, he named his single giant continent Urkontinent, the original continent, but in the 1920 update to the book he referred to Urkontinent with the nickname Pangaea, and that was what caught on amongst the tastemaking geologists of the day. Note to self, classical Greek and Latin always have the advantage when you're naming something, so when you come up with a new theory about a supercontinent, remember it'll attain more credibility if you dub it something like Zaltzophelania rather than Zaltzpatch. In the time of Pangaea, there was also a single ocean, Panthalassa, again from the ancient Greek pan, all, and thalassa, the sea or the ocean. Come to mention it, ocean is from Greek as well. When the world was assumed to be a big flat disk encircled by a river, that river was called Okeanos, or Oceanus. A lot of Greek words have their k's softened when other languages get a hold of them. Oceanus was personified as the deity of the same name, who was the son of Gaia, and Uranus, the sky god, who was also Gaia's son. What? It was a different time, alright. Thanks to etymology, the Greek gods have really managed to cling on to fame long after most people stopped worshipping them. They're still all over the English language. Anyway, according to Alfred Wegener's theory, Pangaea started drifting apart again around 175 million years ago, leaving us in this fine state of not knowing whether the world has 4, 5, 6 or 7 continents. Luckily, one thing we can all agree on is that the etymology of continental breakfast is from the ancient Greek for hotel con to ramp up the price of yogurt and croissants by pretending they're imbued with European sophistication. Supercontinents are thought to be on a cycle, so in a couple of hundred million years, the continents might all glide together again to form another one. Geologists are already thinking up names, such as Novo Pangaea, New Pangaea, or, because they think Asia and America would be squished together, Amasia. It'll amaze ya! Listen, geologists, I think you can do better than that portmanteau, and I'm here to help you with that whenever you need. I'll give you mates rates. And now, please, the follow-up. There's been a big range of responses to the last episode, in which linguists Lynn Murphy and Rachela De Felice talked about their research into the different ways in which please is used in the US versus the UK. And I'm hearing particularly from people in a relationship with someone from a different please culture saying, oh, this explains so much. I'm travelling around the USA right now, and ever since the episode, I've been so paranoid about using please appropriately when ordering in restaurants that the panic makes me try to be more polite, and so I've been inadvertently using please even more than I would normally. Sorry, America! Listener Matt has been doing his own comparative study. 11 years in the UK, 15 in the US, your please episode was a pulling back of a curtain that I'd always assumed was a wall. I've heard from a lot of American listeners, not so many Brits, which I'm interpreting either as, yeah, that sounds about right, or don't make us examine our own behaviour. But the USA is so vast that I'm not surprised that there's an array of please use, a disparity of social and professional expectations, and in the ways manners are expressed, and also in attitudes about how one should treat waitstaff. There seems to be a bit of a generational difference in please use as well as geographical, so Lynn, Rachela, can you start researching that variable and let us know? Several listeners from the American South have piped up to point out that they are power users of please, likewise ones from Minnesota and the Pacific Northwest. I keep hearing about the Cincinnati please, which sounds like a cocktail or a euphemism, but Dale, born and raised in Cincinnati, Ohio, says, Cincinnatians confuse visitors by saying please when they don't quite hear you, so whereas most Americans would respond with pardon me, or I'm sorry I didn't quite hear you, or huh? A Cincinnatian says please as a way of asking you to repeat yourself, only louder, which according to Liz, stems from the way German uses bitte, since so many Germans settled into the area. In England, in that circumstance, we'd say pardon or sorry, but it's not an apology or a request for a pardon. Bethany says we Canadians use sorry to mean can you repeat that, I don't want to bother you, and you're being inappropriate, which sounds a lot like how the Brits use sorry, and many Canadians wrote to say that Canada errs on the British side of please. Julia says in Australia there's a pull between old ties to the UK and too cool for school US attitudes, so we're all over the shop. Some of you told me that in Belgium and Holland, people will say please, where in English we'd say thank you, because it's an indirect translation of alstublieft. Apologies for mangling the pronunciation. It means if it please you. Keo says, I'm Irish, and I think we often use please similar to the English, in my experience, but my partner is Montenegrin Czech. We speak English between us, but when we first started living together, he'd get frustrated if I asked something like, could you pass the salt, please? He's explained that this is because where he's from, between family members or people who love each other, you don't use terms like please, as they are actually a distancing form of politeness. You use them with strangers to show respect and politeness, with what I gather is some deferential distance, but among family, you don't use it. If you care for someone, of course you're going to pass the salt or butter or whatever, so no need for please. Gillian lives in Minneapolis, in that aforementioned hotbed of please use, Minnesota. She says it's the home of an over-the-top politeness culture known as Minnesota Nice, of which, she says, to me, the most striking feature is the liberal use of thanks. Phone conversations devolve into a competition to see who can be the last one to say thanks before hanging up. I regularly find myself thanking people for whom I've just done a favour or performed a service. I used to work in an indoor children's play park, which was exactly as awful as you'd imagine, and my quiet rebellion was to short-circuit this ritual by smiling and saying, you're welcome. I hadn't actually been rude, so they couldn't complain, but I'd often see a flicker of irritation cross their faces when I didn't respond to their thanks with the expected, no, thank you. Good times. Thank you has a number of functions as well, not just expressing gratitude and appreciation. I talked to Rachela De Felice and Lynn Murphy about that too. Here they are again.
Thank you has this label as the polite word, but you can use it to cut someone off, for example, on a podcast or a radio show or a similar conversation in a very final, thank you, let's move on to X. Yeah.
Thank you, I've already faded your mic down.
Exactly. And it's an interesting ambiguity.
Thank you is used to mark points in an exchange. So I give you the money at the till, you say thank you, you give me my change, I say thank you. And that's why you get so many thank yous in those kinds of till interactions, service encounters. If you hand me the credit card machine and I say thank you, and then I say thank you as I hand it back to you. I mean, these things happen in British till interactions. And I'm not thanking you for anything, really, when I give you the machine back. I'm giving you something. But I say thank you to say, I'm done with my bit of this interaction. It's now time for you to do your bit.
Here's what I found a real head-scrambler. The thank you that's intended to be grateful but is received as rude because the thank you tacitly suggests to them that you didn't expect them to do whatever it is you're thanking them for. As an Italian now living in England, this has caused Raquel problems.
I fell into that trap after a few years of living here and going back home and having dinner with my parents at home. They would bring something to the table. I would say thank you. And they would get really annoyed, saying, you know, why are you thanking us? Do you think it's weird? Do you think we wouldn't normally feed you?
A simple you're welcome might have been a more grateful and graceful response to Raquel's thanks, or one of the many other expressions we use to mark our acknowledgement of an exchange.
So when I moved out of America, initially in South Africa, and people would say, it's a pleasure, I'd say, you liar. It was not a pleasure.
Or you pervert.
You just lent me money. That was a pain. That was not a pleasure.
We say that here as well.
Yeah. So you get, it's a pleasure, no problem, which a lot of people complain about.
What's the problem with no problem?
That it belittles the request somehow, or the requester.
I feel like it more suggests that the impact of the request is minimal.
Well, that's what the sayer probably thinks,
yeah.
But some people find it annoying.
It
don't know.
Bother me.
Because also that's quite a fun response when you say thank you is to say it's nothing.
Yes.
There's that in Italian, isn't there? Because saying niente.
Yeah, well, I think that's related, no problem or not at all. It just means, yeah, it wasn't a big weight for me, it wasn't too much for me.
Probably the real problem with no problem is that young people say it and older people don't, and therefore it's considered faddish and new, you know.
As long as you don't start saying no probs, then I think we're safe.
Your randomly selected word from the dictionary today is rowel. Noun, a spiked revolving disc at the end of a spur. Try using it in an email today. This episode was produced in a meconium-coloured room in a B&B in Utah by me, Helen Zaltzman, with music by Martin Austwick. The music you heard during the part about continents he made here in the B&B room, recording himself whacking the lamps with a pen and kicking my suitcase. It's a jolly holiday with the Zaltzwicks, we make our own fun. His sounds better than when I try it. You can find this show at Facebook and Twitter / Allusionist Show and at theallusionist.org.